This is the Michael K. Show podcast.
I'm joyful and fun.
Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2.
That's cool, man!
On 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
This is Eli Manning, and the Michael K. Show starts now on 98.7 ESPN.
And a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Monday. It's April 19th, 2021. Michael K., Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg. We're apart, but we're together for the next 4.5 hours, the other 19 and a half. That's your responsibility. Well, let's get right to it. We start with the Yankees Pinstripe Report, brought to you by Woodbridge, by Robert Mondavi. Please, if you feel like it, get ready to go on the K-Show couch. You're more than welcome there. We'll try to talk you through this. Brian Cashman had a Zoom call today. People were expecting some seismic change. Nothing like that. Just saying, hey, we know we're better and we will play better. But what an awful weekend for the Yankees. They got swept by the Tampa Bay Rays when Stanton hit the home run in the second inning yesterday. That was the only lead that they had during the weekend. They're playing terrible baseball. There's no way to sugarcoat it. There's no way to put lipstick on a pig. They've been awful. And to talk about the absurdity of the whole thing, this is the first time in the history of New York sports that the Yankees have a 5-game losing streak and the Knicks have a 5-game winning streak. First time
ever.
Wow. First time ever.
How about that?
So that's Yankees, amazing.
Yeah, it is an amazing stat. Yankees get swept yesterday 4-2. And what makes it even more painful is that Gerrit Cole was the one on the mound. And that's the one that you have to win all the time, because the last time they won, Gerrit Cole was on the mound Monday. So then he got the start yesterday, pitched well, did give up a couple hits and double to Yoshi Susugo. That turned a 2-2 game into a 3-2 game. Then Darren O'Day gave up a home run in the ninth inning, make it 4-2. And the Yankees walk away getting swept. Now today is a day off. So what exactly can they do to get out of it? If you look up and down the lineup, there's absolutely no one hitting except for DJ LeMahieu, and he's not hitting the way he hit the last 2 years, and Gio Urshela is holding his own. But, you know, talking about let's take Hicks out of the number three spot, who are you putting there? Judge has not hit. Hicks has not hit. Stanton has not hit. Gleyber Torres has not hit. We can go on and on and on. Rougned Odor has not hit. Aaron Hicks certainly has not hit. Clint Frazier has not hit. It is a complete, utter breakdown offensively, and that's the one part about the team that you never thought was going to be a problem. And boy, is it a problem, and their defense again was very rickety yesterday. A couple of bad plays by Aaron Hicks in center field, a throw that I don't know where Clint Frazier was throwing the ball, and on and on and on it goes. So if you want me to sit here and try to put a spin on this, that things are okay. Well, things are not okay. They're 5-10. They have the worst record in the American League, and they have the second worst record in all of baseball behind the Colorado Rockies. That's it.
Sheesh.
So, I mean, I still think it's early. You know, 15 games out of 162 is certainly not going to crush you. I don't think anybody in the world is going to run away with it, although the Red Sox are winning today. They got swept by the White Sox yesterday in a doubleheader. There's not anybody that's playing great right now except for the L.A. Dodgers, and the Yankees don't have to worry about them. So, I mean, we'll talk through everything, but it has been absolutely odious baseball all around. All the pitching except for Gerrit Cole has been terrible. I'm sorry. I can't spin it any other way. They should be embarrassed the way they're playing, and I'm sure they are.
But it's 15 games, right?
Yep.
And I think there's two things at play here. There's the in-general Yankees are going to be okay, which I can buy, and they got a lot of hitting. And I think over 162 games, they're not going to finish under 500. I think they're still going to be a playoff team. But are they going to win this division? And the biggest question to me, and I don't know if it was addressed in the Zoom conference, I was following the quotes throughout the presser earlier today. The biggest concern is, why are the Rays better at baseball than you? Why? Because that's ultimately going to be the killer. Yeah, everything's going to be okay. They're eventually going to hit. They're eventually going to win their 90-plus games, get into the playoffs, do what they do, do what they've been doing now for the better part of 3 decades. They will figure it out. The team is too good to finish under 500 and likely miss the playoffs. But why is Tampa flat out, without question, better at baseball than you. With a quarter of the payroll, they can lose Snell. It doesn't matter who they lose. Doesn't matter who they plug in. They can beat you, no doubt. Throw the glove on the field, they'll beat you. They beat you 5 out of 6 so far this year. Beat you in a best-of-5 series. What, did they only lose to you twice last year in the regular season? Why are the Tampa Bay Rays better at baseball than the Yankees? That's what I need to know, because it doesn't make any sense. And that's the biggest problem. There's no reason this team should settle for the wild card against a team with like zero payroll. Why are they better than you?
Yeah, it's a good question. If you include the ALDS last year, the Yankees have lost 7 straight series to the Tampa Bay Rays. So now they start off 5-10, and they've lost 2 series to Tampa Bay this year. This is the deepest into a season in which the Yankees have been alone in last place since 1991, when they were 9-17 after 26 games, and that was not a good year. Now, this is not happening by accident, okay? This is not just, well, they're losing wacky games. The team has played genuinely bad baseball. They're currently batting .210. That's the worst average through 15 games since 1968, a terrible Yankee season. Their OPS is .642. That's their worst through 15 games since 1973. And they've struck out 139 times. That's their most through 15 games ever, ever. So I wanted to find one positive thing, and I looked up how many times has a team started 5-10 in a season and won the World Series? And it's happened 4 times in the history of baseball. The most recent was 2002 when the Angels did it. So it's not something that occurs a lot. And, you know, you can say it's early, but you can really hurt yourself. You can really hurt yourself early, and you could really run away with things early. Well, and the thing that the Yankees have to hang their hat on, except for the Dodgers, no one's running away with it. No right. one's running away with it, and that's the most important thing to look at. So they haven't buried themselves, Don and Peter, but, boy, they have not distinguished themselves as a baseball team.
No, it's not good. I mean, you can't sugarcoat it. I mean, they got swept at home. You can't even really blame the weather, right? Usually when an offense isn't clicking, it's, oh, well, it's so cold, but – you know, they've played a lot of these games on the road, right? They lost 2 out of 3 in Tampa. Then they went to Dunedin and lost 2 out of 3 to the Blue Jays. So it doesn't matter, warm weather, cold weather, they just can't get it going. And, Peter, the Rays haven't run away with it, because it's not like the Rays are beating up on everybody else either, but they beat up on the Yankees. And that's where I didn't hear any answers today. And that's what's just so frustrating, because the fans can call up and say, well, Hal's cheap. You know, they're not spending the money. Oh, neither's Tampa, and they're still finding a way. You know, all the analytics, all the money that goes in to analyzing the game of baseball, but yet the Rays seem to figure out a way to be better at it than you. And that's concerning, because if you can't beat the Rays, then that means you're not going to win this division. And you know what? In Toronto, maybe the Red Sox are for real. We'll see. They did lose a couple of games over the weekend to the White Sox. As you said, they're winning today. They haven't even played the Red Sox yet. But it's two things. It's, all right, we're 5-10, and I heard a lot of Brian Cashman, Peter, explaining how we're going to hit, we're going to be okay. But this thing with the Rays is a problem. Because now, and they enjoy beating you. They're having fun doing it. They're embarrassing you. I need to know how that can be. And until you figure that out, what are we doing?
Well, it's an interesting point to be at, right? It's not like week 1. When a team's playing badly and you're like, okay, relax, okay? But it's also not like they're approaching the All-Star break either. It's enough where you're not crazy to be concerned about the team at this point. I mean, listen, it was enough that Jay Bruce said, I've seen enough. I'm not sticking around for this nonsense. I could do bad by myself. But, I mean, this is it's enough where you can not sound like a crazy person and be worried. Now, I still don't think we're going to get the same thing we always get, which is fire Boone, get rid of Stanton, making up deals for people that are not even feasible. We're going to get all of that. But at least in this case, you go, you know, at 5-10 and the worst team in the AL, you have to at least pay attention to some of these thoughts.
Well, there was some thought when all of a sudden it popped up today that Cashman was meeting with the media via Zoom at 12:30, that, you know, was Boone's job in jeopardy, and here was Brian evaluating the Yankee manager so far.
we're all in the same boat with performance. Our record is reflective of our organization. Obviously, Aaron's a piece of that, as am I. But otherwise, he's doing everything he needs to do. He's cross-checking his, whether it's lineup related, whether it's how do you deploy the troops on the defensive standpoint. You know, obviously, he spoke to the team before the Montgomery start when we faced Class now the night before after that tough loss. He obviously engaged the group in a strong way. You know, so he's doing everything he needs to do. And most importantly, supporting these guys because we trust our players and we trust their abilities and we trust over the course of time that will, as it normally does, correct itself. And then obviously with a lot more certainly games under the belt. So, you know, I think Aaron Boone's doing everything he can do within his power currently.
Now, Brian was asked, why'd you choose to talk to the media today?
The purpose of me being on this call right now is it's an off day. Don't want to run and hide from it. Want to acknowledge, obviously, our disappointing play, but also reinforce that we're not going to have 15 games have us adjust the course. For our message to our players and therefore our fans is we are going to fight our way out of that start. And hopefully by the end of the month, you'll see a more reflective record that gets us back online and gets people's confidence back to where it should be. And that's the main purpose of this right now.
Now, let's talk real concerns right now. I think they're going to hit. I've said that over and over. But here are real concerns that I don't see changing anytime soon. They have a subpar defense. Rougned Odor is not a plus defender at second. Gleyber Torres is not a plus defender at short. DJ LeMahieu is about average at first base. And even when Luke Voit comes back, Luke's not a plus defender at first. Neither was Jay Bruce. And, you know, the quiet little secret, Gio Urshela is unbelievable at the ball hit right at him. He doesn't have much range. There were a couple of balls hit down the line that he didn't even twitch on. So the infield defense is not a sparkling defense. It's just not. Behind the plate, I think Sanchez has not been an issue, but nobody's going to compare him to Johnny Bench behind the plate, and Higashioka does a nice job back there. But in watching how this team has been put together, they're not an athletic team. They're just not. There's nobody on this team that can win a game on a consistent basis just with flat-out great athleticism. They're a bunch of sluggers. They're a bunch of applauding sluggers, yeah. I mean, Aaron Hicks, if he would be able to get on base, is athletic. And Judge is athletic. But DJ LeMahieu is not an athletic type of player. Now, don't get me wrong. If you're playing at this level, you're obviously an athlete. But when you know what I mean by athletic, a guy that is an incredible runner, can do different things like that, like a Ronald Acuna or that sort of player. Where is that player? Rougned Odor is not an athlete. Gleyber Torres is kind of a thick shortstop, so he's not that sinewy sort of athlete. Same thing with Gleyber. So this team, and Aaron Boone has never, ever shied away from this, they live and die with the home run. They're not hitting home runs. They don't hit home runs, they're not going to win games. And when they don't hit home runs, you know what? They strike out an awful lot, which is what we detailed earlier. Now, here's the second thing, and this is something that can be argued about. So following Friday's game, which was an absolute carnival clown show, Aaron Boone tore into the team after the game. Now, he didn't say that he tore into the team, but Clint Frazier met with the media afterward and Stanton said he was really, really angry. And I don't blame him. But in this world of baseball now, that sort of thing is frowned upon by organizations. So Joe Girardi was not as loving and understanding and caring as baseball people would want their managers and coaches to be now. So when you are unfailingly positive like Aaron Boone has been, which is one of the reasons he got the job, and he is an unfailingly positive guy, all of a sudden you're going to turn it on. It could go either one of two ways. The kids could say, wow, Dad just yelled at us. He never gets mad. Or the kids go, Dad's yelling. He never gets mad. So the team is playing right now undisciplined baseball. They're playing sloppy baseball. They're playing uninspired baseball. And you have heard me on this air for years go, pump the brakes on blaming a manager in this day and age because the manager and the front office, they are in lockstep with decisions.
Right.
But the way a manager is also in lockstep with the way the front office wants. These are not the days where Billy Martin could flip over a table and get his team's attention. Lou Piniella could actually have a fight with Rob Dibble. No. This is a different world. You've got to coddle these players. And you know what the Yankees look like right now? And nobody's going to like to hear this. They look coddled. They don't look scared. They weren't scared when Aaron Boone yelled at them on Friday, because you know what they did? They laid an egg on Saturday.
Right.
Jeff Van Gundy once told me, never have a team meeting and never yell at your team if you're facing the Chicago Bulls next. He should have had the team meeting after Saturday's game when you had Gerrit Cole pitching the next day. And even they lost with Gerrit Cole. So I just think that this team is a new age team. The organization is a new age organization. But all of a sudden, Aaron Boone's going to start getting angry
right.
when he is everybody's favorite guy and there's a real connection between he and his team. Don, we both have kids. If you're going to be the good guy dad and all of a sudden you get to be a disciplinarian, they're not going to buy it.
But this is all by design, Michael.
Yes.
I'm getting tweets from people right now saying, well, the problem is the Rays and the Red Sox, they put the ball in play. The Yankees don't put the ball in play. It's a home run or nothing. Well, that's by design.
Right. It's not by accident now.
How many arguments have you had with Aaron Boone where you say, oh, well, come playoff time, you're going to have to figure out a way to put the ball in play because these home runs and strikeouts aren't going to work out, and Boone would fight you. No, this is what they've built. This is what they want. Launch angle, hit the ball 500 feet. That's the way they play the game, all right? That's the way they want to play the game. So you can't complain and say, well, they're relying too much on the home run. They believe that's the best way to win. So far, they're dead wrong about it. See, that's the problem. Why are the Rays better? They're better at the analytics, too. Like, you built this team by design. You have Aaron Boone as your manager. Why? To coddle the players. And now the players look lost, and now they need that disciplinarian, and now it's not going to work because you had that in Girardi. You didn't want it. So by design, you brought in the touchy-feely player manager that's supposed to get the best out of these players, and it doesn't seem to be working. And now you're going to want them to yell, and as you said, it's going to get laughed at because the players are smart enough to know why Boone is there. And this is no poor reflection on Boone. This is what the organization wanted. This was the type of manager that they wanted. That's why this is very disturbing, Michael. This goes beyond them slumping. This goes beyond when are they going to figure it out. A lot of the issues that they have are by design. This is the team they want. And it's failing them. And you go back to last year, 33-27. And we all, myself included, said, well, if it was over 162 games, they'd still win their 100 and run away with the division. Now you got to look at it and say, maybe last year was an indication that even in 162 games, they would have had to settle for the wild card. Even in 162 games, they were still going to lose this division to the Rays. Because the next 15, it's gotten worse. And then since 2017, when they were a fraction of an inch from going to the World Series, Michael, what's happened since then? Gradual steps back to where now they seem to be so far away from the team that in 2017 came within a whisker of going to the World Series. They're taking steps back. So maybe they're not knocking on the door anymore, Michael.
One thing that got my attention on Friday, though, this is the New York Yankees, and they have over a $200 million payroll. And you're playing the Tampa Bay Rays, who knocked you out of the postseason last year and won the first series against you. And this is the beginning of a three-game set where you just lost a series to Toronto and Dunedin. And you got to go with an opener? You're trying to outsmart the Tampa Bay Rays? And I've said this before. I said this to Aaron Boone during the winter. You're the best-looking guy at the party. Don't try to be the smartest. Why couldn't they start Michael King? Why were they getting cute by starting Nick Nelson, who gave up two runs and they never looked back? Why? Why were you doing that? In your organization, you don't have another starter. You couldn't start Michael King or start Nick Nelson. Instead, you had to go with an opener because that's what the Rays do. You have Davey Garcia down there. You have Domingo Herman down there. And this is the route you chose. It's almost the same thing as what you did in the division series. You started Davey Garcia and brought in Jay Happ. Don't try to outsmart the Rays. With the Rays yesterday, it worked. They had Kittredge pitch 1 2/3. Then they brought in Yarbrough, and he was great. And they do that because they have nothing. They're short on pitching. The $200 million Yankees had to go with an opener against their division rival. Why? Why couldn't Michael King have started that game? It's not like you started a righty like the Rays did yesterday in Kittredge, and then you follow with a lefty. You started a righty and followed with a righty. Why? Michael King can't start? He's a starter by trade. And by the way, so is Nick Nelson. Don't try to be so cute. Why should the richest team try to be cute? I mean, that's an indictment on the organization when you've got to be cute to fill innings. You really needed an opener on Friday? When your bullpen has been absolutely besieged by work,
right.
You needed an opener. You couldn't let – oh, by the way, 9 innings so far for Michael King, not a run allowed. 9 innings, but he had to come in as a bulk guy. Why? Because you want to be too cute for your own good. Again, $200 million payrolls should not have to use openers. And if you do, then you miss the boat on pitching somewhere. That's where the whole weekend started. Let's start Nick Nelson as an opener. Why? Why? You aren't flipping their lineup. You're following one righty with another. What were you doing? And then Nick Nelson gave up 2 runs, and Michael Wacha turned into Sandy Koufax.
Yeah.
What an awful weekend for them. Awful. Well,
but that's the problem, is that all of these things are issues. With the openers, with the bullpen being exhausted, with the defense being bad, all of it is exaggerated, Michael, by the fact that they can't hit. Because the feeling is they should be able to slug their way through. And it doesn't matter who the pitcher is, they're not doing it. Because if they scored 10 runs yesterday, are we talking about anything else? No. But even Cole can't figure out how to survive this if he's not getting any run support. He can't score 1 or 2 games in this league and expect to win. There's no reason that they should be sitting there struggling to score runs. You know, they're trying to get back into the game, Michael, you know, lead off double, you know, and you don't get them in.
They didn't even move them.
They didn't even move them. You figure out you're struggling a little bit. All right, let's hit the other way. Let's get sacrifice flies to try to squeeze some runs out.
Yeah, it was disturbing. It really was. And they don't make adjustments at the plate because, you know what, they're home run hitters and they're not hitting home runs. And when you don't hit home runs,
yep.
Then you're lost. There's no other way to do it. You can't bake a cake without the necessary instruments. They bake a cake by whipping the eggs. They don't get cute about it. That's how they bake a cake. If they're not whipping it, they're not doing it. If they're not hitting home runs, they're not scoring.
Yeah,
there's no adjustments. That they and again, Boone explained this, and I buy exactly what he said on Friday after the game. When you're not hitting, you look lifeless. Well, I'll tell you why. They look lifeless, they look uninspired, and they're playing undisciplined baseball defensively. They're not making the right moves. They must snap out of it. I think they will. I'm not burying them at 5-10. I'm just telling you things that do concern me.
Well, you don't bury them, Michael, but you start to wonder, are they good enough to win this division, or are they going to have to settle for the wild card again?
I think they're still good enough to win the division.
Well, it's starting to slip. I mean, I'm starting to lose some confidence here. I know it's only 15 games, but they didn't win it last year.
Yep, you're right.
You know, and I think that you can hear, you know, you hear in the quotes with Brian Cashman, you hear that they're the Yankees, and they're going to figure it out. Well, at what point are you no longer the Yankees anymore? I mean, you haven't won a World Series since 2009. Yeah, you're a great regular season club, but over the last couple of years, you know, 33-27 last year. You know, so you probably would have maybe finished, you know, 10 games above 500, which is certainly not an embarrassment, but certainly nothing to write home about. Probably settling for the wild card again, and maybe it comes to a head now. Maybe you don't make the playoffs. You know, it's always trying to, and if you do, it's making some kind of big deal at the trading deadline to try to get better when the other teams just seem to have it figured out right now. So, yeah, I'm not throwing them away, Michael, but over a long stretch of time here, they can't beat this Tampa team, and there's really no reason for it.
Hey,
can most people
Tampa
even
team.
Name like 5 Rays? Seeing them the last 2 weeks,
they lost 2 series to the Blue Jays too. That's 2 division rivals.
Well, they right. The only series that they've won this year was against the Orioles, right?
Yeah,
two against Toronto, 2 against Tampa.
It's not good. Nobody's saying it's good. It's a real bad 15 games. It's awful. It's one of the worst in the history of the team.
Right. But if this is Bernie Williams and Paul O'Neill and Derek Jeter, you can say, well, we're the Yankees. We're going to be fine. But there were questions about this team even when they were winning 100 games. Can they win a championship? Are they good enough? Are they winners where they can take the championship or not? So we even had those questions when they were winning 100 games. Now they're not winning 100 games. Aren't they built to win the championship? You know, they get treated differently than every other team. We're going to have a dance today later talking about the six straight wins that the Knicks have had. You know, but the Yankees are held to a way different standard. When does that standard get looked differently? Because there's nobody on this team that compares to the core four or the guys that were winning four championships in 5 years. So when do we reevaluate? You're not the Yankees anymore. You're just another team trying to figure it out. Because that's the only way you're going to be able to figure it out, because none of those players are going to come out of the dugout and help you win a championship. These are your players. Who are we waiting for? Luke Voigt? Is he the guy that's going to come in missing. And save everything?
That's the only guy that's missing. That's only thing they could turn to.
Again, none of those guys. The Warriors not coming out. Jeets isn't coming out to save the day. But we judge the Yankees based on all the championships and how great they've always been. But right now, it's a different decade. It's a different team. And over the last year plus, Michael, what are they? They're a team that's a little bit above 500, having to settle for the wild card. So why are we judging them differently than that? Even 2017, even 18 and 19 when they won a combined 203 games. That was 2 years ago. What about now?
Let's take your phone calls next. A lot of people want to talk about this. We're here for you. That's the Yankee Pinstripe Report brought to you by Woodbridge, a proud sponsor of the New York Yankees. Woodbridge by Robert Mondavi, making classic wine for over 40 years. Now, you all know we're celebrating our new 2 p.m. start time by giving away $10,000 in the month of April. Later in the 2 p.m. hour, be listening for the KCAS sounder, which is this. See ya! See ya! See ya! And be ready to call in at 888-987-ESPN to claim $500 cash. It's all from your home for the hookup, 98.7 ESPN. All right, we'll take a deep breath. We'll towel off. We'll take your phone calls. A lot of angry Yankee fans out there in the world. It's Kay LaGreca Rosenberg and you on YES and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Check it out now.
Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Let's get right to it. Let's go to Sal in Long Island. Sal, start it off today.
Michael, can you hear me?
Yeah.
I just want to tell you guys, all 3 years, I just turned 67 yesterday.
Happy birthday.
I'm like a little kid in a little league game. I love the three of you guys.
Thank you.
Oh,
thank you so
nice
much.
Nice man.
I've been following for years. Next to Bill Chadwick, you're my hockey guy.
Wow.
That's pretty nice.
I just love you, and I love your wife Jody when she was on the news, man. I miss her.
Thank you, Sal.
Pete, what can I say, buddy? I was disturbed when you first joined the show, and man, I am so happy you are here. You are such a cool guy. I love listening to you, and I love those shots on those terraces, man. I really do.
Look at Sal; those are all. Thank you, Sal.
I don't want to keep blowing smoke at you guys. I just want to let you know, I've been a Yankee fan since 1960, and we've had more bad years than good, believe me. I know the 27, the 28, you know, all that, the championship things. But, Yankee fans, calm down. Don't be surprised if this team finishes third or you have to fight for second to try and get in the playoffs. We're just missing something this year. You could see it. And we might get better as we go along, but we're just... You know, putting Clint Frazier on our field, we miss that guy coming off the bench or the young kids coming up that really, because like you said, we're a home run hitting team. But when we had these other elements, we were able to build runs. We were able to run, you know, steal a base. But now it's like we swing away or we hit one out, and that's it. And there's no offense. And I'm following what you guys are saying. But don't be surprised, Michael, if this team does not come back to be more than a little over 500 teams.
I'll tell you what, and I'm being honest now. Because no matter how whatever side I come down on, I'm going to get criticized for it. And I'm cool with it. I mean, that's the rules of engagement. This team, I still think, is going to win the American League East. I think they've gotten off to an horrendous start. They should be embarrassed the way they're playing. Embarrassed. I think they are. But there's too much talent there. They will hit. If they don't hit, I'll be shocked. And Sal said, don't be surprised. If they have a bad year where they're like a 500 team, I will be surprised. I'll be stunned. So I'm not going to put lipstick on a pig and tell you that the 15 games they've played well, they've played horrible baseball. In fact, no other team other than the Colorado Rockies has played worse. Get it. Not denying it. I think it's still there. Nothing drastic has to be done. It's still there. I labeled what I'm concerned about. Kluber and Tyone have to develop into good pitchers or they're in trouble. Right now, it's Cole and Montgomery. And after that, let's cross our fingers and see what we got. And the crossing your fingers and see what you have then, well, you're burning out your bullpen 3 out of the 5 days. Not good. Not good. That's what I'm concerned about. Am I concerned about the hitting? No. Their track record, the back of their baseball card says they'll hit. But I am not going to sit here anymore and say you shouldn't be angry. You should be angry. The way they've played is terrible. And the defense is terrible. And the fact that they look uninspired and uninterested, that's terrible. But I think it will get turned around. And I'll be here. I'm here every Monday through Friday. If it doesn't happen this way and it's July and they're under 500, you can call and say, Michael, you were wrong. And I'll take it. I'm just telling you, over 35 years covering this game, this is a good team, and it will get better. But I'm not going to try to convince you that what you're seeing is an aberration in terms of 5-10. They've earned 5-10. In fact, they're probably worse than 5-10. And I'm talking Woolworth for all of our older listeners. Let's go to Let's go to Pete in Brooklyn. Pete.
Hey, Mike. Don, Pete.
How you doing?
I don't know what the radio equivalent of an Emmy Award is, but Michael, you and Don should get one for your analytical takes over the last 10 days, which have been just spot on and brilliant.
Thanks,
my
man.
Question for you is, you'd mentioned before in talking about Boone, oh, we're in a new Yankee era. What was wrong with the old era exactly? The era that produced the 27 World Championships, where lineups were based on gut and instinct. And sure, I mean, statistics have always been existence, but no one's ever been they were never a slave to statistics. I mean, you know what Tino Martinez and Bernie Williams, ex-Wobas and FIPs and all these goofy, convoluted stats that we have nowadays? Like, when did Brian Cashman say, you know what, that's not working. Let me switch to the analytics that was invented, if you watch Moneyball, by a guy like Billy Bean to compete with the Yankees. Since they couldn't afford the same level of talent that the Yankees could, let's come up with this formulaic way to get the most of our marginal talent, okay, by having them focus on launch angles. When did Brian Cashman say, you know what, let's do this with our great talent, the talent that we paid $200 million for. Let's neuter them with three true outcomes and launch angles and load management. Like, how is that a good idea when the other way, if you ask me, was working just fine, Michael?
Well, I guess the numbers pushers, Pete, they don't think that way works now. And, the Dodgers are a highly analytic team. And the Rays, I mean, they survive on squeezing every ounce out of every number. My point is, a lot of teams do that. Now, the Dodgers are not a team like that, neither are the Yankees. A lot of teams do that to make up for the gross inequity in revenue. That's why it started with the A's. Let's find undervalued assets that nobody else discovered. Well, now the undervalued assets are overvalued. So the A's are out of that game. They've got to find another way to compete. But it's not just the Yankees, Pete. It's everybody. Everybody is using analytics. Some more than others. It's just amazing to me that, are your analytics not as good as Tampa Bay's? And Tampa Bay has a $60 million payroll and you have a $205 million payroll. I mean, you should be better. Your analytics group should be smarter and better than Tampa Bay's. They should find better players and better matchups and things like that. I also contend that when you have such a financial advantage, though, what are you doing with openers? What are you doing? That's an epic fail on your part in producing pitching. You shouldn't have to ever use an opener, ever.
Yeah.
The only way you should use an opener, Peter, the only way is if you're scrambling to get a starter for that day. Like if you've got like 13 games in a row and then there's a double header thrown in there and you don't have enough starters, okay, then play games. But you have to use an opener against the Tampa Bay Rays on a Friday night at the stadium? That's shameful.
Well, a Friday night at the stadium in mid-April.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
It's amazing. Herman's down there. Davey Garcia's down there. Michael King has pitched great, and you use an opener. I'd like to have an explanation. And I can't corner Boone in the clubhouse. We're not allowed that on that level anymore, which is not. For health and protocol and all that. I'd love to talk with him privately and go, what was that about? You needed to open with Nick Nelson? Makes no sense, especially when you had available starters. It makes no sense. And it made no sense last year in the ALDS to open with Davey Garcia and bring in Jay Happ. You lost the game. I said it at the time. You lost the series that day. Davey Garcia couldn't pitch the whole game, or Jay Happ couldn't pitch the whole game. No, no. They had to get cute because they want to out-cute the Tampa Bay Rays. No! You don't have to out-cute them. You're the best-looking guy in the room. You have the wallet that's bulging. You don't need to impress people with your wit. Just smile broadly, flash those pearly whites, and then let everybody just keel over in love with you. Instead, you're trying to tell jokes and be Noel Coward? No! Boy, that reference went over so many of our listeners.
No, it could have been anyone. It didn't have to be Noel Coward. I get it.
Well, what should I have gone with there? Like some very debonair sort of person that your demo would have gotten, Peter. Give me a name.
Say you could have said, listen, you don't have to try to be Peter Rosenberg when you're Rick DiPietro. Just show up and smile. Take off your shirt.
You know, that's not a bad one.
Not
a bad one, yeah.
You don't need to
make jokes.
Man.
Yeah.
You don't need to write hip-hop parody songs.
No.
Keep it moving.
Rick just has to smile. Take his shirt off.
That's right.
You can't do that.
I can't. In fact, if I smile and take my shirt off, people will think I need to go to an institution.
Right, because you are the Tampa Bay Rays. Rick
I am
is the
Rays.
New York Yankees.
And I do what I do well. I do all the market research that's needed, all the work. All Rick has to do is show up and smile.
It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. 1-800-919-3776. More of your phone calls as we try to talk you off the ledge. Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you right here on YES and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Ah, yes. We've talked a lot of baseball the first 2 hours. Now it's time to talk some hoops. The New York Knicks have won 6 games in a row. I think it all turned when they were trailing Memphis and then came back and won that game because the season was starting to spin out of control, everybody. I think they'd lost 4 out of 5. Now they've won 6 straight. And for the longest time, I have said, even if they make the playoffs, which now they clearly are, either the playoffs or the play-in, that they were going to lose the first round. Well, now pump the brakes on that prediction because if they finish 4th or 5th, they can win the first round. If they avoid playing the Nets or the Sixers, or the Bucks, then they can win the first round. If they finish 4th, they could beat the 5th team. If they finish 5th, they could beat the 4th team. Now, if they finish 6th, I don't think they could beat the Milwaukee Bucks.
Right.
So, but they have put themselves in a position now where they could actually avoid the play-in. They are gutty. They play with a lot of heart. They play good defense. They play smart. And that's exactly the opposite of what New Orleans did yesterday. Check this out, everybody. You know, everybody, oh, we got to get Lonzo Ball. You know, he's going to be a free agent. We got to get Lonzo Ball. Well, Derrick Rose is a wizened veteran. So he's got the ball with about 7 seconds left in the game. The Knicks are down by 3. And he has an internal clock in his head, so he's not panicking. He wants to get the ball to Randall, who had a great game again. And they covered Randall, just the way Van Gundy designed it. So then Derrick Rose takes off for the basket. Why Lonzo Ball then sloughed off of Bullock to try to impede Derrick Rose is beyond me. If Derrick Rose hits the layup, it's a 1-point game with 2.3 seconds left. All you have to do is inbound the ball. The game is over. Instead, Lonzo Ball sloughs off of Bullock to try to impede Rose. That opens up a lane for Rose to kick out in the corner to Bullock, and Bullock drains a 3 to tie the game and essentially send it into overtime. And then the Knicks blew them out in overtime, so they end up winning by a score of 122 to 112. This team does not quit. They have held home court. They've done what they had to do. They never give up. And the bottom line is, I think it's a fun team to watch. It's not an overly talented team. I think Thibodeau has gotten the most out of his roster. Guys like Bullock have done a great job. Obviously, Randall is having an all-pro sort of season. And you're getting contributions from Derrick Rose, who Thibodeau pushed to get. They did not make a move or try to overpay to get any big man. And they rolled the dice with Nerlens Noel and Taj Gibson. And they've both been outstanding with Mitchell Robinson being out. They are set for the future. And then, best of all, you got a situation after the game where Zion Williamson is gaga over playing at the Garden. Now, he was going gaga over playing the Garden even when they were terrible before the draft. But now it's fun. This team looks like it's going somewhere, not into the cesspool that it's been for 20 years. This is amazing what they're doing. Let's not go to sleep on this. This is a fun season for the Knicks, and it could be more fun if they finish fourth or fifth in the Eastern Conference.
Now, that's going to be tough because the Celtics have found themselves. As Peter said, that was a great game on Saturday, great finish. They've won six in a row. Hawks have won eight of their last 10. Now, what's going to really tell for the Knicks is that six-game road trip they coming up after this homestand, where they're going to be taking on Memphis and Denver and the Clippers and the Lakers. That's going to be season defining. You know, they got the Suns here on this homestand. That's going to be tough too. So the schedule does get a lot tougher, but avoiding that play-in would be great. I don't know if they can get to four, Michael, but you know, if they could stay out of the play-in, what a success that would be. What a success. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had a month ago or maybe even less than that, we had Breen on who was saying that it's forgivable for them to not make the playoffs because it's not supposed to be about this year. That ship has sailed. They're making the playoffs. Right now, Chicago's the 11th seed. Michael, they're seven games clear of that. So right now it's about, you know, trying to see if you can avoid the play-in. Yeah, taking on the Bucks in the first round is not going to be fun. You'd like to finish five or four, but there's a lot of work to be done. But they're in the playoffs now, and avoiding the play-in I think would be unbelievable.
Yeah, for them to even drop out of the play-in I think is almost virtually impossible with the amount of games that are left. They're in the play. I think the play-in is the playoffs anyway. That's the way it's set up.
Well, especially if you've
it's almost like a wild card game.
It's not like that are 9 or 10. You know, no. If they finish 8, they're in the play-in, but that would have been good enough to make the playoffs under normal circumstances.
Hey, no one thought that the Knicks were going to be 4 games over 500 after 58 games.
No. And here's my question. You know, we talked early on. First of all, Michael, slow your roll. I know he's still not Embiid, but it's almost like Randall was like, hey, Michael K., don't laugh at me being MVP. He's been incredible.
Yeah, you got to take that back, Michael. That was
he's averaging 31 points over the last six.
That was
he's,
a tough take.
No.
It wasn't a tough take at all. I don't think he's the MVP. I think he's going to be one of the 15. He's going to be all NBA, which is even better
than an all-star situation.
He's going to be one of the top 15 players in the game.
But clearly, to Peter's point, he's playing well enough that fans could chant MVP at the Garden.
It's not a wild thing for fans to chant with the way he's playing. At all.
He's not winning MVP. That's my only point.
Okay. Well, you know, there are politicians who run for office who aren't going to win the election. Should all their supporters just walk away?
Yeah, you wonder why they don't.
Anyways, he's been fantastic. And I wonder now, like, we talked early on about, you know, the moves that they make and what pieces you add and remove. Guys, I don't think Randall's a piece that you can consider moving away from.
No, I think he's a piece that you keep to build around.
But he's
not your number one piece. That can't be it.
Right. We all agree if he's the best player on the team, they're not going to be championship quality in this version of the NBA. But wouldn't you guys all agree he has done enough that it should absolutely be built around him?
Well, I don't think he could be the best player on the team. I think they have
that's what I'm saying.
Right.
You don't.
I don't know if you build around the second or the third best player.
But
that's
point. By him being the second or third guy could allow them to go find that number one guy. Knowing that you'll be playing alongside as your second or third option, a player this good who will be this beloved and plays with this much heart. Well, like, I just feel like at this point, to move forward with the Knicks without Julius Randle, it's a completely different team. He is the New York Knicks right now, personality-wise. It would be such a hugely different situation to no longer even be considering Julius Randle as part of the future of this team.
Now, another thing that I've said a lot during this basketball season is if they finished, you know, with the 7th or 8th seed and played the Nets or the Sixers, it would be an easy series for either of those teams. But I'm recalibrating that, too. I don't think that they would win that series, but I don't think that Steve Nash or Doc Rivers wants to see the Knicks there, because the Knicks are going to make you work. Even if they lose in four games, they're going to make you work. They're going to make you sweat. They're not going to roll over and let you blow them out. They're not. They're not that team. And their coach is too good.
Right.
And I think that he can coach against anybody and outcoach them, including Doc Rivers and Steve Nash. So those two teams have too much talent for the Knicks, but those are not going to be easy gets if they face the Knicks in the first round. That's not the first round series you want.
As presently constituted, see if you follow this logic. The reason why they would be a tough out against the Nets or the Sixers is precisely the reason why they won't win that series. Because it's exhausting. And to win 4 out of 7 against the Nets or Sixers, like you said, they'll work hard in the 2 road games, lose, probably take a game 3, almost a game 4, be down 3-1, and then eventually lose the series. And be in every game. But the way they play against those much more talented teams, I think it would be just too much to ask to win 4 out of 7.
No, I don't think the Nets we'll talk about the Nets in a moment, but I've been saying all year I don't think they could lose 4 of 7 to anybody. But, you know, you don't want to be pushed in that first-round game. You finish first, you want to have a nice cookie in the first round. Knicks are not a cookie. Knicks are not a cookie. They're just not. They're a tough team, and they're so well-coached. This guy is really special. And shame on the Knicks for passing him over the last time they could have hired him.
Right.
Maybe we wouldn't have gone through the cesspool that we deal with Phil. But that's how good this guy is. I mean, he has gotten every bit of juice out of the orange. Everything. There's no rind left. He has squeezed everything out of this team. And again, take a look at the roster. It's not filled with glittering stars. It's a lunch pail roster, except for Julius Randle. It's a lunch pail roster.
Well, how much different is it than last year?
Well, it's a different Julius Randle. It's the same player, but it's a different Julius
Randle. But doesn't he get credit for that?
Yeah, he does. He told them what to work on. And obviously they didn't have Derrick Rose last year. And he pushed for Derrick Rose.
Right.
So, you know, he deserves a lot of the credit for what's going on with them. And you know, bravo for him. Now, let's move over to the Nets. This team can't stay healthy. Now, it's encouraging that Durant didn't get hurt with a, you know, a hamstring or a calf or anything with the Achilles. He got kneed in his thigh, so he has a thigh contusion. That doesn't mean that he's going to be out forever. That's just a bruise. It takes how long will it take the bruise to heal? And if the playoffs started tomorrow, I think he could play through a thigh contusion. And it looks like it's getting closer for James Harden. But you know what's slipping away for the Nets? The chance to finish first. You know, their foolishness, the way they employed Durant by not employing him against the Sixers, that cost them a game that was worth 2. Then they lose again this weekend to Miami. And this is yesterday's game was the first time that I would question just a bit what Kyrie was doing. Kyrie tried to take over the game. And he taken shots down the stretch that he shouldn't have taken. He forced them and he missed them. And even he said after the game, Landry Shamet had 30 points. I should have been looking for him. That's a mistake on my part. So the self-awareness is cool, but this team has to get some games with the three of them together just to work out any of the rust or whatever. But if those three get together and play up to their capabilities, there's no stopping this team. But they have been a little disappointing over the last couple of weeks because they're not at full efficacy yet. They're just not. When will we see it? So I think Durant got off to a great start yesterday against the Heat, and then he gets kneed in the thigh. Boom, he's out of the game. Harden's out of the game. Kyrie has disappeared a couple of times. We don't know why. So it's just this team is a conundrum. And if you want to know what team is easier to root for, the Knicks are. The Knicks are more relatable. The Knicks are lunch pail. Most people that are sports fans are lunch pail. The Nets are, you know, they're the executive suite. They're the one percenters. They're supposed to win. So you can see why Knicks fans are more excited about the game, their team, than the Net fans are. And it shows in ratings, too. It does. Much more people watch the Knicks on MSG than watch the Nets on YES. Much more. And the Nets are a better team. But what's more fun to watch? The underachieving team that overachieves? Or the under-talented team that overachieves? Or the over-talented team that you just haven't seen yet? They're 2-3 in the last five games, the Nets. It's not the way they should be playing as we head to the playoffs.
Well, they got 15 games left, the Nets, to get everything in order with the three of them. And Harden isn't back yet, and who knows when Harden comes back whether Durant will play. They'll be lucky to get 10 games with all three of them playing.
Oh, I don't think they'll get to 10 games.
Well, you said Durant doesn't look serious, and Harden's on his way back. They've got 15 games left. So over the next week, you don't think it's possible to get all three of them?
Oh, they have any back-to-backs? Because if they have back-to-backs, Durant doesn't play back-to-backs. So that removes him from some.
Well, I let me rephrase it. They should be able to have all three healthy with 10 games remaining. How many of those 10 will all three play?
Right.
So is it going to be 8? Is it going to be 7? Is it going to be 5? It's certainly not going to be a lot of work. It's not going to be a great sample size.
Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Glenn in Staten Island. Glenn?
Glenn?
Hey guys, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
All right, not bad.
All right, we got that out of the way.
All right,
good
talk
stuff,
there, Glenn.
That was good.
Brought
good
it.
Talk. Here is Woj on Get Up. And he was talking about the impact of the Nets' big three not playing together much. Here's Woj.
7 games, that's the amount of games that Kevin Durant, James Harden, Kyrie Irving have played together. And it is a concern. And I think if you're just matching up talent in the playoffs, not just the Nets' star power, you know, but the role players they have, adding a Blake Griffin in the buyout market, Joe Harris is having an outstanding season. The Nets, you know, they don't have a lot of holes, certainly, but the continuity that they don't have in big moments, and the postseason, you're going to be in a drag-out game with a Philadelphia, with a Milwaukee, with a Miami, and they don't have that experience together, and I think that with those other teams, that's their belief that they could still get Brooklyn in the postseason.
I think that's a great way to put it. Brooklyn fully engaged, these guys having played together for 72 games, I think would be absolutely unbeatable. So the only hope that you can hang your hat on is if, in fact, they're not all together and they're not in sync. That's it. Because their talent is extraordinary. Even their bench talent is extraordinary. So that's what you hope for if you're the Bucks or the Sixers or any team that's going to play them. You know what? They haven't been in these big situations. We have. We've played together all year.
It's just starting to become increasingly fair to ask the question, which combination are we going to get come playoff time? Like, I don't know how can you exist in a world where you just pretend everything's going to be all right in the playoffs?
Yeah, the highest leverage games, everything's going to be cool.
Everything's going to be fine. Now, listen, we know that there have been big moments so far, and we weren't willing to put them all on the court then, but when it comes to it, trust me, they're going to be good. And when you get there, no one's going to get hurt. They're just going to play through. Like I just don't see, to me, the onus is now on them to prove it to us. If you're a sane person, you're going, no, in all likelihood, they will not all be available for the playoffs.
Now, by my calculations, they've got 15 games left, 4 back-to-back.
So that's 4 that
forget it.
That right. Durant's not playing.
Now, one of those back-to-backs is coming up this week, so I'm not even sure that Harden would be back in time for that. So if you waited until the end of the week for Harden to come back, then you're talking about 3.
NBA just named Julius Randle the Eastern Conference Player of the Week. 4 straight 30-point games, 4 straight wins. Let's go to Spike in New Jersey. Spike.
Spike.
Well, my friends, I got to tell you, I got to quote Jackie Gleason watching the Knicks. How sweet it is. And they were gifted that game last night. I don't want to be Lonzo Ball today running laps.
That's boy, was Van Gundy was Van Gundy chapped or what?
Well, his remark, I didn't hear it. I had called Colin up after the game, And I said, unbeknownst to me, what he said, and Colin told me, and he said something about a high school team would have done better. And if you notice that they didn't, Lonzo Ball didn't get his ass off the bench in the overtime. Unbelievable. Rose made the wrong play because he's got to get the ball to a three-point shooter. They held two timeouts, Michael, Peter Dunn, and all he had to do was let the two go in, call the timeout, and then take the ball out of half court and throw it off of someone's foot. Game's over. Unbelievable. But the Knicks don't quit. They're more fun to watch. The Nets, I don't think it'll matter that much. I want to make one MVP comment, Michael, on what you said. To me, watching as much basketball, it's just my opinion. I think the three, in the true sense of MVP, three most valuable players to their teams this year have been Steph Curry, Joel Embiid, and Julius Randle. You pull those three in the true sense of most valuable, not best.
I agree.
I think those three, you agree?
Yeah, I do. Those three, you take Embiid off Philly, they are not competing to be the best team in the East. There's no way. They're probably the fifth, sixth. They're down the line. You take Steph Curry off of Golden State, they are not competitive playing above 500 basketball. And you take Randle off the Knicks, and we're not even talking about the Knicks.
So excluding Harden because of the antics in Houston?
I think you're,
or would
you're
you not have
Harden
him in there
because
anyway?
If Harden's not there, Kyrie Irving might have been playing more, and they might have been fine. There are other options, at least.
Yeah,
maybe
Harden
Durant comes back sooner.
Harden will get
not
votes.
There.
I mean, I always thought that his candidacy was flawed because of the way he got out of Houston. But then, you know, with him missing the games that he's missed, that. But Embiid's missed a lot of games. There's not a flawless candidate. I mean, LeBron was certainly in the discussion before he missed all these games. Antetokounmpo has to be in the discussion as well. You know,
how many games has Embiid missed? Andrew?
Andrew, how many has it been? I know I think, it was a couple of weeks, right? Maybe 3 weeks?
I think he's missed, I want to say 15, but I'll have to double check.
He's played 38 games.
It's all about 15.
So good call, Andrew.
So, I don't know. I mean, if you take Julius Randle off the Knicks, okay, they're not making the playoffs.
Right.
I mean, Golden State might not make the playoffs. So if you take, I mean, Embiid's the most valuable because of what he's done for the team. They're going to be the number one seed in the East.
Yeah, see, but this is the thing, though. But you just said it. He's played 38 games. Steph's played 49. Julius Randle's played 57.
Yep.
So, I mean, Michael, you might need to back down and just admit you were wrong. Julius Randle's in the conversation.
No. I'll admit I was wrong if he wins the MVP. I said he's not the MVP.
Yeah, but you're getting on the fans for chanting MVP
as
when there's
if he's
more than
the
enough
combo.
Evidence for them to do it.
We'll see who's right, me or the fans.
No, you're wrong already.
No, you're already wrong.
You're already wrong.
My opinion is not wrong.
So you could only chant MVP if he's
going
to win the MVP?
But it's not like 2 + 2 = 8. That's wrong. If I think he's not the MVP, my opinion's not wrong unless he wins the MVP.
No. Your opinion's wrong because you made it seem like the Knicks fans are educated. Why in God's name are they chanting MVP when he's got no shot? Well, he does have a shot, and fans have seen a player play at a level where that's why you chant MVP when
exactly
it's not
right.
Obvious to the world that he could be.
Now, Embiid has missed 18 games this year. The only player to win MVP while missing that many games is Bill Walton. He missed 24 with the 77-78 Trailblazers. Listen, I like to argue with you all day, but we have Reggie Bullock coming on.
Let's ask him what he thinks.
Well, he's going to say that Julius Randle's the MVP of the Knicks, and he is, clearly. Anyway, he hit a big three that sent the game into overtime. Then the Knicks ran away with the game in overtime. It's Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Split the ice apart and break the frozen.
Ice picks.
Well, Ice Picks brought to you by BetMGM Sports. Dallas is the site of the Stars and the Red Wings tonight. Dallas trying to get back into the playoff hunt. 4-0-2 in their last six. Playing host to the Red Wings, I'm going to go with them covering the goal and a half at plus 110. That's my pick tonight. Stars plus a goal and a half, or minus a goal and a half for plus 110. That's Ice Picks brought to you by BetMGM Sports. Place your parlays, props, and future bets at the King of Sportsbooks. Get the app today.
Now you have your hockey podcast, Game Misconduct, out again today. A new new episode with the great. The great's on today, right?
Yeah, E.J. Raddick was on.
Yeah,
love him.
Talk about and a really nice story. I'm not sure you followed it, but the Canucks finally got back on the ice nearly a month last time they played because of COVID. 21 players had it, some of them very, very sick because they got the Brazilian variant and it was really bad. But they hit the ice for the first time since March 24th and beat the Maple Leafs in overtime. So that was a nice story. We talk about that and the Rangers and the Islanders and everything else. So thank you. Wherever you get your podcasts, Game Misconduct.
Love it.
Should be a radio show, in my opinion. But
98.7 ESPN presents Clubhouse Confidential. It's Thursday, May 6th. Now, we're giving 98.7 listeners an inside look at the game with some of the best minds in baseball, featuring Alex Rodriguez, Matt Vasgersian, Buster Olney, and it's all hosted by Don LaGreca. An exclusive VIP Zoom party talking all things New York baseball, and we'll give away some great prizes. So score your VIP access. Be the first caller right now at 888-987-ESPN. Again, be the first caller right now at 888-987-3776. Clubhouse Confidential is presented by PC Richard & Son, 98.7 ESPN, and we'll have another opportunity to win in the 5 o'clock hour. Let's go to the phones.
Shall we?
Let's go to somebody who wants to defend Peter's question, Andy and Merrick. Andy.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Very good, very good. So I'll try to make this quick. I know I'm fighting an uphill battle here. I'm not saying it was question of the year, but this seems like an overreaction to me. Correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't Washington win the division by one game last year? I know 19 isn't a crazy low pick or whatever, but it's a lot of good quarterbacks available this year. I don't know. You guys even said it yourself. We have, you know, done it all to death with the Giants and the Jets. We've been over it a million times.
Sure we have.
You know, it's relevant to talk about Washington,
Andy,
and their quarterback. It's their worst
thank
position.
You. Thank you, sir.
Andrew.
Peter, you're welcome.
Andrew.
Please.
Andrew.
A peanut.
This show is New York based.
Okay.
All right, so you can't say that we've chopped up the Jets and the Giants to a fine powder. You continue to do it. That's what people want to talk about.
Wow.
The majority of our listening audience did not care about Washington's 19th pick
but
in
he
the
did.
First round. Certainly not the first question out of his mouth to guest
but
like Herb Street. Andy, are you related to Peter or
wait,
what?
Wait. Let me say one more thing, too. It led to an interesting story, too. Matt Jones, he wanted to go to Florida. He had to work hard his whole life or whatever. Always the underdog. Finally made his way
thank
in.
You.
I don't know. I mean,
well, you can ask that. I mean, he
right.
Andy, first of all, he lost because of the way he disclaimered the question. You know I'm a Washington football fan or going to get killed for it. There's a ton of Cowboy fans. There's a lot of rumors that Jerry Jones is going to try to trade up to get Pitts. Why didn't you ask that? It's more Dallas fans than Washington fans. They're relevant. They're in the Giants division. Mm. No, it's a bad job. Again, if it's a throwaway the way that Michael had asked about the Reds, like if Michael's first question was about, hey, what do you think about the Reds,
fair,
I'd kill
though.
Michael for that.
No, but, that was the end. That was like
that's
going
what I'm
into
saying.
Break. It was like a fun question, but this was the third question out of the shoot about the Redskins, the football team. Who cares?
Or ask specifically about Jones.
And then you have the nerve to like double down on Twitter because the Washington NBC affiliate used an answer. Okay, that proves my point even more. Did Bruce Beck pick it up at the New York NBC affiliate?
So you don't want out-of-town press. You'd say no press.
It doesn't really do us that much good.
So you'd prefer truth. They don't write about it. It's because it says the Michael Kay Show. Unlike up here, it doesn't say ESPN said. No, it said the Michael Kay Show.
Wow.
You don't want that.
That's a great volley.
You don't want
good job,
that,
Peter.
Though.
Okay. You're wrong, but that's fighting words. That's good
no,
stuff.
I mean, I'll write them. I'll tell NBC Washington we prefer if you don't mention things that happen.
No.
Show.
Again, it's great that they mentioned the show. That they only mentioned the show because you asked an inappropriate for New York question to a guest. So then they picked it up in Washington.
Too early.
Because that's the only place that would have actually cared. And Mac Jones is not lasting to the 19th pick. It's all for naught.
Where's he going?
Not going 19, I'll tell you that. First of all, you think he's gonna pass by New England Patriots where Belichick and Saban have an unbelievable relationship? I think that Belichick would scoop him up if it goes to where the Patriots are picking. 19th pick. Why don't we do a poll on what their name should be, too?
No one cares.
No one cares about what they're going to pick at 19. Am I right, Don, or not? I know you.
No, you're right.
And
Andrew makes a great point too. About, you know, Andy was complaining about all we do is talk about the locals. That Washington question came before any Giant question.
No, well, yes.
Yeah. First of all, we had Herb Street on specifically to talk about the quarterbacks. Right? So we didn't even really get through all the quarterbacks. If you wanted to say, tell us about Mac Jones, where you think he's going to go, perfectly relevant question.
And then he brings up, you know what, I think he could be there at 19 for Washington. Boom. Then you've hit a home run.
Yeah, then it's a tremendous follow-up, too, if you want to go there. But when your first question is, well, I know I'm going to get killed by Don and Peter, or with Don and Michael about this, but, you know, but what could fall to the Washington football team?
Let's take a break. I don't want to go over
You want
to
towel
thing.
Off?
Yeah, because it's a ridiculous argument. There is no argument. We'll be back. We'll reset. Big Yankee weekend of losses. Mets take 2 out of 3 in Colorado. Knicks have won 6 in a row. Rangers 4 in a row. Oh, it's getting hot. Kayla Greco, Rosenberg, and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Well, here on the Mike K Show, we're celebrating our new 2 p.m. start time by giving away $10,000 in the month of April. Every weekday in the 2 p.m. hour, be listening for the KCast sounder or be ready to call in to claim $500 cash. It's all from your home for the hookup, 98.7 ESPN. All right, let's go to the phones.
Shall we?
Want to do that?
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. Let's go to Louie in the Bronx. Louie.
The only saving grace for the Yankees is that the American League's horrible because the National League is going to win the World Series again this year. But when you start breaking down the Yankees, and Don, you're right on the money, all right? I heard you say, now last year I had called up and I told you about this blind spot that Cashman has for starting pitching, okay? And you defended him last year, but that's fine. He signed Cole, no brainer. We all would have did that for $330 million. So what does he do this year? Takes a flyer on Kluber. He has a big question mark with Jordan Montgomery. Herman, the same thing. Hoping that Severino may come back after surgery. He can't even put a starter out there. I'm surprised you didn't take a flyer on Matt Harvey. And probably he didn't do that because the guy was a Met. Okay? That's one thing. Then I heard you talk about Hicks. He will hit. Oh, really, Michael? Take a look at his numbers with the Yankees since the Yankees acquired him. And that's another thing with Cashman. You think when he got him off the Twins, he picked up Willie Mays to play center field in his prime, okay? This guy's a lifetime minor leaguer. If you look at him with the Yankees over the last 5-plus years, his only one good year, I believe, was in 18, where he had about 119 hits. He had good power numbers. This guy's a lifetime 230 hitter. Look at the rest of his numbers the rest of the years. He hasn't had over 80 hits in a season when he is on the field for the Yankees. So what is he really going to hit, Michael? When? He's never hit his whole entire career. Let's go to Gleyber Torres. When he should have signed Didi Gregorius and he shouldn't have let him walk, he turns around and gets rid of Gregorius. The kid moves to shortstop. He's clearly not a shortstop. If you look at the last 2 years that he's been playing short, his batting numbers are going down. And why? Because he's taking his defensive woes to the plate. That's so clear. Look at everybody he's got on that team. He loses Voit. Now, even when he grabbed Voit off the Cardinals, he was no big thing with the Cards either. The guy started hitting power numbers great. Yankee fans fell in love with him. All right, he got hurt, too. These are overrated names. What have they accomplished? What has Judge accomplished? What did Giancarlo accomplish with his National League MVP, hitting for the Marlins, never in a pressure situation, never in a pressure cooker? Down in Florida, he put up huge numbers. When it comes to Yankee Stadium, he can't hit. They're in love with a 37-year-old left fielder. And the guy to take his place can't even get on the field, Clint Frazier, for whatever reason it may be. Okay, so what exactly is good about this team? The only saving grace is the American League stinks. And that is it, Michael. All right, go look at Hicks' numbers. All right, and I heard you on the broadcast the other day. Here's another thing. Odor hits a home run, a solo shot. He hits a blaster kick. He comes up again, and you want to tell us how he hit a home run 470 feet. Who cares how long it went? It was a solo, meaningless homer. Why don't you say that? The first time up,
what kind of broadcast would that be?
Well, I mean, you want me to just hit a shot? Who cares? Doesn't matter. I'll say the same thing about a visiting player if he hits a long shot. So what matters to you, Louis? What matters to you, Louis? Let me talk. I just let you talk for 4 minutes.
Yeah, you just got a monologue, Louis.
If you didn't have DD Gregorius, if you would have signed DD, you wouldn't have signed DJ. Is that okay? So you would have been okay without the American League batting titleist last year. You would have been okay with him not being here for 2 years.
Now let me reply to what you have to say. Michael, what does it matter? The guy won a batting title. Where do the Yankees go?
What did they do with DD? Louis, what does it matter? What did they do with DD? What did they do with DD? So the last time they won a championship was 2009.
But, Michael, how do we know Gleyber's numbers by playing at second base wouldn't have picked up a lot of the slack?
We have no idea, Lou. We have no idea. You're absolutely right.
We have no idea, Michael.
We have no idea. Also, to say that Aaron Hicks, right, is a minor leaguer. He was the first-round draft pick for the Twins. He has had decent years. And you're right. I'm going to tell you what. You're right. Cashman and the analytics crew love him because he gets on base a lot.
And you're telling me he's a first-round draft pick? Who cares? I wish I had a nickel for every first-round pick in all the major sports.
You're absolutely right. So somebody, the Minnesota Twins, thought he was good, right? So you don't care about anything, Louis, right? What do you care about? What do you care about? What do you care about?
What do I care about? I care about putting a nice look. And here's another thing that I didn't hit on.
You didn't get through it.
Supposedly fantastic bullpen that the Yankees have. They have a nice closer. The kid Green's pitching well. I'm scared because Loaiza's coming in the game. I'm scared because Louis Cessi's coming in the game. I'm scared because Darren O'Day, the lifetime journeyman in the American League sidearm, is coming in the game. Where exactly does this make this a lights-out bullpen?
So do you get scared when Zach Britton comes in the game? Well, he's part of the plan. He'll be back in May.
Michael, he's hurt.
I understand he's hurt. But don't tell me that the bullpen
Michael,
is. Don't tell me he's not. Please, Louis,
Michael.
You've had enough time. Goodbye. Bottom line
but
is
Louis.
This. Bottom
hold
line,
on, Michael.
Is this.
Let me just say
what
he did some arguing there that was really brilliant arguing. Like he would take everything that worked for him, lay it out. Then if it didn't, like Luke Voit doesn't work for him, so he writes him off as if he's permanently injured, doesn't count anymore.
Right.
It was.
Well, let me translate.
It was
Louis without the anger. Here's what would concern me from a Yankee standpoint offensively. All right, Judge is a flat out star. We know that. All right, and you can make Stanton out to be whatever you want him to be. That he had no pressure in Florida, whatever. But there, why wouldn't you be concerned about Hicks? All right, because over the last few years he hasn't really hit, and he's a .233 career hitter. Yeah, he gets on base, but. He had that 1 year with the 27 home runs, but not great over the last couple of years. I'd be concerned that Gleyber Torres maybe was a flash in the pan. He's had, what, 3 home runs in the last half a season. So maybe all those home runs against the Orioles and when he came up, maybe he's not the player. I thought that he was going to, in 10 years, be the greatest player on the Yankees of this generation. Now you got to maybe recalibrate. What exactly is Frazier? He was one of the best prospects in the organization. They might have broken him. He's not even playing. So when we talk about the Yankees are going to be okay.
He played all week. He didn't hit. He won for like his last 23.
Right. But they had no problem, you know, benching him earlier. And so when you say they're going to be okay, you were not talking about a Yankee team that's got a bunch of guys with a resume of like a decade of hitting. I think Judge is good. He just has to stay on the field. And so far this year, he's been able to do it. And Stanton. But what exactly is Hicks? What exactly is Torres? What is exactly Frazier? What is even Voit? He hit 20 home runs last year. 22. He's hurt now, but he might be in the lineup now, and we're wondering what he's doing. There isn't an extensive long-term resume like the Yankees of 2 decades ago, winning 4 championships in 5 years. Some of these guys might have come back down to earth. We were surprised that they were winning with a lot of these guys with all the injuries. Well, maybe now we got to really recalibrate exactly how good an offensive team they are. Yeah, sure they were those years they won 203 games, But last year left a little bit to be desired. We had that conversation how many times during the 60-game schedule last year, and now we're having it through the first 15 games this year.
You keep bringing up last year, Don. Now, if you want to say that injuries are part of the problem, then I can see you bringing up last year. They didn't have Judge. They didn't have Stanton. Stop. It's not the team that's put together.
All right,
you keep bringing up last year.
But the Knicks hit last year? The Torres hit last year?
No, he didn't, but he came into camp out of shape, and that's on him. So that's not really the team that we're going to be seeing when they start to hit right now. But you didn't have Judge and Stanton last year. Mike Tauchman didn't hit a bit. Aaron Hicks didn't hit a bit. Gary Sanchez at 147.
Well, Sanchez is on this team and has actually not been that bad.
Right. So, I mean, it's not apples and apples. It's apples and wrenches. Let's see what this team is. Judge and Stanton are healthy. They should be better than they are. We'll see if they are. Go to John in Masspath. John.
Hey, Michael. How are you, sir?
Good. How are you, John?
Yes. I just want to make a point about Cashman and with one pitcher that nobody really said anything about. The Mets, Marcus Stroman kind of gave up on the Mets after the season was over. And he was selling himself to the Yankees. He was trying to sell himself to the Yankees. And Cashman didn't even take a sniff on him. And he got paid $18 million. And I'm a Mets fan. And I say, thank you very much, Mr. Cashman. Who's better than Marcus Stroman that the Yankees have other than Garrett Cole? Nobody.
Well, first of all, they had a chance to trade for Marcus Stroman. Whether they're right or wrong, Brian doesn't look at him as anything more than a number three or four starter. They would never have paid him $18.9 million. The Mets wouldn't have either. The Mets did that because they were going to get a draft pick if Marcus Stroman left as a free agent. I think they were stunned that he took it, and they'll take it. And now Marcus Stroman has been great, 3-0, 0.90 ERA. Cashman did not think that much of Stroman. He said it publicly. He said, we've got that sort of starter. We don't have to trade for him. That's when the Mets traded for him. That's when Stroman really, in his heart, wanted to go to the Yankees, and they didn't want him. So why would Cashman, when he could have traded for him for nothing, then all of a sudden make a bid for him at $18 million? They never would have paid him $18 million. And one other thing that everybody seems to conveniently forget, you know, you want to take all your shots at Cashman. They had marching orders that they had to go under 210. Well, they've got so many people locked into contracts, including Stanton. Where were they? They should have gone after Trevor Bauer. How? How would they have stayed under 210 with Trevor Bauer? Now, you could argue whether or not you think it's right that they want to stay under 210. That's a different story. But there's very little he could have done. That's why he made the deal for Tyone. Let's buy low, see if we can get high. Kluber, $13 million's a lot, but they think that the upside is really good. So they're buying at Nordstrom's rack rather than buying in Nordstrom's right now. And the overall bill is for Nordstrom's, but they didn't have Nordstrom's money this year. They had to go from 250 to under 210. So tell me how they're going to get all these people. And I don't blame Hal Steinbrenner either when you got your butt kicked by a team with a $60 million payroll. Okay, we can't beat a $60 million team with a $260 million payroll. Let's take it down so we can reset the taxes and get better draft picks and have more international signing money. Let's do that. And you're going to blame Hal Steinbrenner when they lost more money than any team in baseball last year? Pump the brakes. There's enough money to win with this team. If they don't have pitching at a $205 million payroll, that's not Hal Steinbrenner's fault. The team's not put together the right way. $205 million payroll, and you have to have an opener in the first game against Tampa Bay? Shame. Shameful. That wasn't strategic. They didn't trust anybody to be their starter on that day? Come on. Michael King could have started. But again, you had to outsmart Tampa Bay. All the people with the computers, let's see how we can outsmart them. Let's have an opener, and then let's have a bulk guy. Tampa Bay does it because it has to, because it has a $60 million payroll and doesn't have star pitchers. The Yankees shouldn't have to do that. And the fact that they do, that's problematic. We'll be back.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.